And on the line right now, we've got Australia's foremost playwright, David Williamson. A great treat for you. He's just finished his last play. Well, not finished, but he's just started his last play, I should say, at the Ensemble Theatre. Crunch Time, we were actually very privileged to go and see it. David Williamson, welcome to Stages.
It's a pleasure to be here, Roderick. And Tricia.
Thanks, David.
Now, David, Crunch Time, we enjoyed it very much. Why is it your last play?
Well, this is my 50th year as a playwright. The first play was at La Mama. The first full-length, well, professional play was The Coming of Stork 50 years ago. And it's I've had 50 terrific years in the theatre. I think I've had about 55 plays produced here and around the world, usually with very good directors and casts, and it's been fantastic. But it also comes at a cost, and the cost increases as the years roll on. And the cost is the actual writing, which is difficult and stretches over many drafts. And gets feedback from my wife and the director and the actors, and then the publicity, then the reception. The buzz I've got over the years is that moment when a play connects with palpably with the audience and means something to them and reflects something of their lives and their dilemmas. And it's still happening. I mean, I've got three plays running simultaneously. They're all attracting very good audiences. I shouldn't boast, but Crunch Time's all but sold out, and Family Values has, and the Melbourne Theatre Company and Queensland Theatre are doing a revival of Emerald City, which is doing very well too. So I thought 50 years, the stresses are getting too great. Let's get out while people are still coming, and they're still coming in numbers, and it's been terrific send-off, sort of. I don't think I've had three plays running simultaneously before, but you know, I feel happy to go now rather than be staggering around at 98, wondering why the theatres are half full,
yes,
or quarter full, or not full at all.
Yes, and go out on your own terms and go on a success. That's the way to go, isn't it?
And of course, David, your plays over the years have touched on many important issues, and Crunch Time is no different. And I really felt that the post-war generation have always taken control of their own lives and, you know, talked about a lot of issues over the years. And of course, this one does come down to, well, euthanasia, which is a huge issue amongst older Australians and younger Australians as well, of course. And I just wanted to talk to you about, you know, that sort of issue that comes up in Crunch Time for the character of Steve.
Yeah. Well, voluntary assisted dying is supported by the vast majority of Australians. I think something like 75-80% of people believe that in a case where someone has no hope of survival, is undergoing enormous stress and pain and distress, they should be allowed to decide when to call it a day, just like I've called it a day as a playwright. well, not just like, no, but it's, and two states have legislated for it, and there's been no unseemly rush to kill oneself. I mean, it's a very reasonable thing for a civilized country to do. And so, yes, I was annoyed when a group of very ideological Christians who control the New South Wales Liberal Party will sort of move against the will of the vast bulk of people. It's not democracy to me. It's something else.
Has the ability that you seem to have to sort of maintain the rage, to use a term coined a bit earlier, is that something that kind of has been able to inform the way that you write plays?
Yes. In this case, I was angered. I think it's so unjust that people who are really suffering have no hope, have no quality of life, and not allowed to determine the manner of their going. I've seen friends become human skeletons, and they didn't want to become that. But the laws of this state make it really, or of New South Wales, make it really, really difficult to go when you want to go. And I also thought, well, if there is a God, what kind of God would want people to die in this kind of excruciating fashion? It just doesn't make sense. So, yes, it was anger that fueled that. But it's not just about dying. It's about family, because family I know quite a bit about. I've had 5 kids, their partners, and 14 grandkids. And
that's an achievement.
Yeah, well, I've been in the middle of families all my life, and the dynamics are always fascinating, because you have your greatest, I think, your most intense experiences in life are family experiences, for good or for worse, sometimes very terrific and good and sometimes bad. So there's always drama within families, and there's drama within Steve's family, there's no doubt about it. And the driving engine of that drama is sibling rivalry, which is, it can be a very potent force, as I have observed over the years.
Yeah, so I enjoyed very much the scenes between the brothers and the way that unfolds. So I think you've done a great job, as you always do, in those, you know, those scenes that have the one-on-ones sorting out a particular issue.
Well, thank you. Yeah. Well, I've also got a very good director and a very good cast. I think my two brothers are fabulous. Guy Edmund and Matt Minto. When they're going head to tongs at loggerheads, yes, it's real drama.
And you've had Guy Edmonds before as well in Rupert and a few other plays.
Guy's one of our great young actors, and it's always a joy to get him in one of my plays. This role, he just plays to perfection, I think.
I agree.
And also, I thought it was quite humorous, just going back to the assisted dying, that when Steve has to sort of talk to the family about it, that he has to ask one of his boys to go to go overseas to get the particular drug that will actually work. And to me, I found that quite I actually found that quite infuriating.
It's true.
I know it's true, because I have heard of people trying to do that, and it's absolutely infuriating. I found that very infuriating when you were talking about that earlier, that people have to risk their own family.
Oh, it's just so stupid. Yes, you have to find, at the moment, it seems like Peru is the place to go. You've got to go right across to Peru and look for a veterinary practice that will sell you some of the stuff, because they still use it for animals.
Yeah.
And that's the length to which you've got to go to organise a dignified exit. It's crazy stuff. Mm. I hope the other states of Australia become as enlightened as Victoria and West Australia as quickly as possible. But I fear not in New South Wales. As I say, the Christian right has got a stranglehold on the Liberal Party, and it's not going to change for a while.
And, of course, when you're talking about the sibling rivalry of the two central sons and brothers in this play, there are the wives as well that are the other characters, and, of course, the wife of Steve and the two wives of the boys. They're very important characters as well, aren't they, those female characters?
Yes, they certainly are. One of them is not so nice.
Yeah.
she has... She's very interested in money and high living lifestyle, and is very, very put out when her husband, played by Guy Edmonds, jeopardises his share of the old man's will. She's not happy at all. But even she has an arc of development. She realises that in the end that living a life of total indulgence with a rich guy can have its downsides.
And earlier in your career, there was some criticism of the way that you portrayed female characters. Have you consciously made an effort to redress some of those criticisms, or perhaps they weren't warranted in your view?
Oh, look, that criticism came mainly from The Removalists, one of my first plays. The older sister, who was originally played by my now wife, Kristen, was a nightmare. She was a socialite, a horrible woman. And her younger sister was compliant. She allowed herself to be bullied by older sister. So they weren't the archetype of liberated, strong feminist women. But I was they were there for a purpose in the play. That's what they were meant to be. My objective wasn't to create characters that would fuel the feminist revolution. Some writers think that what they write is, in a sense, propaganda to create characters that show the way forward for whatever cause they're doing. Well, in The Removalist, these were flawed females. But the critics who said that didn't obviously look at the males, who were even more flawed. They were terrible, except for the poor young constable. Mm. But the thing was, oh, of course, that's how men are. That's fine. But we want to see better women. And you can understand that given the times. But, I think that criticism went fairly quickly because I got married to Kristen, who was a very forthright, very capable and positive woman. And so I was living with a role model of a woman who would never be pushed around, and she's been a wonderful insight into how intelligent and together and capable women behave.
I noticed that particularly in Sons of Cain that you had three particularly strong women who were good advocates for their various causes.
Yes, well, at that time Kristen was working as a AA journalist in our most crusading newspaper, now defunct, called the National Times.
I thought you might have had some inside information there.
Yeah, well, I mean, Kristen would come home and tell me tales of the level of corruption in New South Wales politics at that time, and I thought, this is something that has to be written about, and that play nearly didn't go on because of legal fears, but we got it on eventually.
And just on The Removalist as well, I mean, I've seen some revivals of it, and it is looked at schools as well, and it does actually look a lot, as you were saying, they were just saying that's how men actually are, but it's come up now under that umbrella of toxic masculinity, and really looking at even the attitudes of how what Australians are born into, perhaps colonial, genocidal attitudes, or those kind of things, which made men in those times act in abhorrent behaviour and violent behaviour, because I think The Removalist really surprised people with the violence, the police violence.
Oh, yes, and it was based on a real story that told to me by a removalist. He'd watched it in action. The police, in this case, didn't beat the guy to death, but they certainly gave him a working over. And what got to me about Australian male attitudes was that the removalist, who'd witnessed it all, thought it was a wonderful afternoon's entertainment. And and I thought, that's what this play is about. I mean, the assumption that police can do what they like, and toxic masculinity obviously hasn't disappeared in our society. We'd all like to think it has, but the evidence is otherwise. In fact, there is more domestic violence now than when I wrote The Removalists per capita. So nothing has got better.
And these ideas that come to you for the plays that you've been writing every year, I don't know how you do it, is it coming from something that sparked your interest, or do you go after something? Like, say, when you did The Club, did you go and try and find out about the interior workings of a club, or had someone given you some insight into it?
Oh, no, I grew up in Victoria as a supporter of AFL, and I knew the internal politics.
You knew, okay.
Back to the front, it was all over. I was sitting there thinking, oh, I've run out of ideas. There's nothing new around. I can't. And every day I was reading the headline, coach sacked, player storms out, player on drugs. And I was reading this happily, saying, well, there's nothing to write about. And suddenly it hit me, oh, yes, there is. And I don't need to do the research because I spent my life up to now inadvertently doing it.
Mm. And, of course, you've had a long association with the Ensemble Theatre, where you are having your final play performed, although, as you said, Emerald City is on and also Family Values is on at the Griffin. But in 1995, the first play that went on there, I think, from the information I've got, is Emerald City in 1995, directed by Sandra Bates. And then you've really had one on a year there, right up until now, 2020, with Crunch Time.
Yes, yes. For 10 years there, I was doing a play a year for the Sydney Theatre Company and a play at the Ensemble. Although, I mean, the original production in 87 of Emerald City was Richard Werrett's Sydney
yes.
Theatre Company production, but then Sandra felt that she'd like to tackle some of those plays and do them in a slightly different way. She felt that sometimes the truth of the drama was lost in some of the characterization, and Sandra is a very truthful director. She wanted the real emotion to be there. She didn't want any of the characters to be cheap, and so she started off doing the plays that the Sydney Theatre Company had already done, and then I gave her some new plays, and for I was 25 years at the Sydney Theatre Company, and for 10, as I say, the last 10 years. I had a play at the Ensemble and the SEC every year, which was which was a lot. But
it's amazing. I don't know how you came up with all those things.
People kept coming, and I loved doing it. I had more energy in those days, and I just loved the thought of those words on the paper becoming something real on stage that could react in a real-life situation with a real-life audience, and that was the buzz.
And, of course, many of those plays became films. Emerald City did become a film, and Travelling North, quite a few of your plays, which has been great, of course, for Australian cinema.
Yeah, yes, I've had some really good transcriptions to screen. I've had about seven or eight of them, I think, done for screen. Most of them done well, which is terrific.
And you don't feel that you've lost something from the original play when you get the compromises you need to make with the film medium?
Well, no, you just accept that it's a very different medium. You on stage, you're relying on language and body language to tell your story. On film, you've got the highly visual close-up, the atmospherics of the sun filtering through the leaves, and the mood is more easily controlled in film. While the stage is about story, you've got to have a good story with good dramatic momentum. It's also about the way people use language. I delight in the way people use or misuse language to deceive themselves deceive others and to further their own interests and sometimes to express love and decent emotions. But on film, film is much more sparse in its dialogue. It tells more of its story through the images. So in a film like Travelling North, people who saw the stage play and then see the film think they've seen roughly the same thing, but I think over half the words went for the film version. But I was writing the screenplay. I was very well aware of that because I've been writing film right from the early ages too. So it's like you speak two different languages, French and German, and you adapt to whatever medium you're with.
Well, I can tell you that we did Don's Party for an Election special that we did a while back, and your words also work really well on radio. I don't know how you go across all those mediums and still make it all work.
Oh, well, Thank you. I thought some of the language in Don's party might be a bit difficult for radio.
It was a bit confrontational for some people, but it was an election broadcast, so really anything goes at that point, you know?
Right. Okay.
So it was no problem for us. We got through it.
And David, your plays have toured overseas, and of course the films have had world releases as well. And you are known as really, an Australian voice. You've given us, you know, people who speak in our own accent, people who are like us. How do we translate overseas? I've never really seen that myself, but have you ever seen that one of your plays about us works overseas as well?
Oh, well, look, there have been varying reactions. I've had quite a lot of productions in London and quite a few in America too. I've had six of my plays done as quality telemovies on Polish television, which is
wow.
Fascinating. Yes. It's in Polish, of course, but I know what's happening. So they've been all over the joint. The London reaction was very mixed to Removalists when it went on at the Royal Court. I think Clive Barnes said, well, if that's Australia, the Aboriginals should have won. I think that was the point I was trying to make. On the other hand, it got a couple of really prestigious prizes, that production at the Royal Court, and it sort of cemented my career back here, because at that stage we still were suffering from the cultural cringe that A.A. Phillips named, and unless something succeeded abroad, we weren't taken seriously back here. So those productions, while they might have had mixed reactions, they also had very good reactions from certain quarters that helped my career.
Mm. Well, David Williamson, thank you so much for giving us the Australian voice on stage and screen
for
50 years.
Yeah, 50 years, yeah.
I don't know how you've managed to come up with something every year.
Well, I've been helped by the fact that having all these sons and daughters-in-law and daughters and grandkids, I've certainly been kept in touch with the concerns and the language of the next two generations down. So I've been able to write not just my generation, but the other two.
Yes. Yes. Well, maybe that's the secret. Anyway, thank you for being with us here on Stages.
And, of course, Crunch Time is a strong play, a very strong play for the end of the 50 years of the plays. Don't miss it. It's playing at the Ensemble until the 9th of April. Thanks so much, David Williamson.
It's a pleasure.